He's probably first with fireworks.
Wrong.
What?
Satisfied with anybody who wants to hold on now.
There you go.
I mean, it was that.
Yeah, that kind of.
Happy chat with Pollyanna.
Yeah.
So, immediately. I have many, many questions for you when coming to meet. So I did not text back. Let me know when Helen's first.
Oh.
We do have to deal with them.
Yeah, I try that.
But it doesn't have to always be on their terms.
Nope.
I don't know how Mark left after I did and got here.
He beat me here too.
Hold on, 70 seconds, faster.
670 seconds?
That's it, 500.
Oh.
See, you're talking a lot about 72nd. It sounds like a magical route to me with not too many cars.
There's no speed limit on 72nd, really.
Why? Because there's no law enforcement.
Yeah.
Is it on?
Yes.
Is it on?
They have the sheriff after you.
That's a funny joke. That's really
okay,
a funny
okay,
joke.
Lindsay's here, so we can
okay.
Start.
Yeah.
I think
it is. Yeah, it's on.
Mm-hmm.
Fireworks?
Yeah. I did ask Bill to come up. He said he was going to be...
Fireworks?
You said you wanted...
I talked to Bill out there, and to the extent that we are talking about the ordinance and potentially providing Bill with some direction as far as what we would want an ordinance or multiple ordinance drafts to look like in preparation for the June 5th hearing, I thought it would be valuable for him to hear it directly. So since he'll be the one kind of drafting it, I could obviously communicate it to him.
We didn't do the minutes. Maybe we could do that. I might give him a couple minutes to come up.
We can't do the minutes.
Yes.
Oh, you weren't here either. So no, we can't do the
There's
minutes.
Bill.
We'll have to wait till next week.
Okay.
Because you guys
Bill's
both
here.
So with fireworks, you have a few things in front of you. After the last discussions that the council has had, one of the things that came up was a discussion that if the council were to proceed with a 4-2, which is what was discussed during the work session, that would actually increase the number of days of fireworks discharge allowed south of 219th. So one of the things in your packet, and I'm no fancy map maker like our wizards are downstairs, but at least kind of a visual of where the fireworks ordinances are today in the county. So everything south of 219th is either at 0 days, of course Vancouver with the ban. Camas is at 2 days and all of the blue is 1 day. So everything is 2 days or less. Everything north of that line is 6 days or more. So if you were to go to 2 days, it is more of a middle point, but at the same time, if Ridgefield and Battleground and La Center are thinking about narrowing down their window, then you know it may actually be more uniformity to have it closer to 1 day, because then it looks a little bit more like what the southern portion of the county already has.
The Battleground's going 2 days.
Battleground's going 2 days. We don't, I think, know formally in any way what La Center and Ridgefield are going to do.
My understanding is that they haven't made a solid decision yet. They're waiting to see what direction this council goes.
But I understand that's
yeah.
what Ridgefield
they want to see which
well.
Way we're going, because I think everybody's striving for some consistency. And in fact, I think eventually we're trying to remove that line.
The Battleground has an ordinance with 2 days in it.
Okay, well, we're not Battleground. Yeah. Battleground can do what they want.
Well, I know. I'm just saying.
Yeah. And Camas has one. I went to the Camas meeting the other night because they're looking at they're 1 day and 2 days, right? Are they? What's
they're currently
2 days.
2 days.
And
2-2.
2-2, their sale dates are, I think they're at 3 days.
July 3rd and 4th. They're actually
second,
two,
third,
looks
and
like
fourth.
2-2s.
This is just their use dates. That's all this is.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
Yeah,
this is not the sale date. So rather than having too many colors, that's all this is.
They're revisiting theirs as well, I think. And here's the point that I'd like to make about this discussion. And I think the city of Camas is actually a good model, is that they took public input before they decided on, they had like four options in front of them, similar to what I think we'd started out with, which was do nothing, restrict the type to a safe and sane type, restrict the days to one, and then whatever sale days, and then, or completely ban them.
And for Camas, it makes a little bit, for them, they were looking at a restriction, they're already at two.
Right, so my point is that they started with four options, and they took public comment. Mm-hmm. And they didn't say, we're going to go this way without getting public comment. And from my perspective, I would hope that that's what we would consider, is that we would consider public comment before we make a decision as to what we're going to do.
That's what I thought we were going to do.
Except that you've already directed Bill to come up with to do a draft ordinance that's 2 days and 4 days.
That doesn't mean we're going to do it.
Well, it looks like that's what you're going to do. If we have
no
choices.
So then draft another ordinance that's 1 day and 7 days. And draft another ordinance
well, how about
that's
we don't
2 days
and... Well, we get some public comment or we have some...
the only issue with that is if we don't draft any ordinances except for the public hearing, we're running into a timing issue. Because, as you may know, there's that you have to do stuff 1 year prior to. And so, if we settle in on public comment before we draft proposed ordinances for the board to approve and or adopt, then the status quo will remain for the coming year. I think we may miss
all
that.
So one option would be there's no restrictions on the number of ordinances that you could have before you.
Right.
You could have 10.
That's what I'm asking.
I agree that we could do that because we should have choices.
Because
so that's why we should
session,
have the language for the choices
I
that
agree.
We might
Thank,
have.
Because okay. when we left the work session, that wasn't the direction
no.
that I believe.
But except that I had a little side conversation with Mark, and I said, we can amend these things, right? Because, so rather than do that, we should have language for various choices
yes,
that
and
we
that's,
want.
Yes, and that's all I've been, that's the only point that I've been trying to make the last week, is that we should have
and
some
I do
options
think
available.
And I do think that there should be an opportunity for public input
yes.
before we make a decision, mm-hmm. so it doesn't even seem as if that we are making a decision beforehand and then holding a hearing.
And then we don't care what they say.
Exactly.
Yeah. So
we're going to have to be careful, because if that's the goal, and I think it's an appropriate goal, you leave out people who work day shifts, which are the majority of the people, if you have a public hearing and take comment during the day. There are a lot of people who might be interested, families.
Well, one of them is in the evening. June 5th is the evening.
So we do intend to do this discussion in an evening hearing.
Yes,
and we'd have
yes.
it in two.
That's what I'm recommending.
Right.
Two. So you'd have June 5th where there'd be the evening opportunity, and then the following Tuesday would, of course, be a daytime, and you would take additional public comment.
And make the action if we were taking action on that day.
So tell me about sequencing of, so if we take public testimony and reach a conclusion,
well,
vote and pass something on June 5, does that become effective?
So I think what I heard last time was that the intent was to have a discussion, open it up for public comment, allow the council to discuss during the June 5th evening hearing. And then actually take a vote on enacting any ordinance, assuming you're going to make changes, that would happen on June 12th, the following week. So
that would take effect the next year.
And then, correct, it would take effect, 10 days, but then it's one year from the date of effectiveness. Mm-hmm. So then it would be effective approximately June 22nd of 2019.
So it would affect the outcome for fireworks.
This coming year.
For
not this year.
Next year.
Not this year.
Not this year.
2019.
Yeah. Correct. That's what I was trying to figure out.
And there's no way to affect anything for this
year. It's already too late.
I know that. But if we even wait later in this
then
year.
The 12th,
It doesn't become effective until after the 4th of July, the year after. So
you could notice it for both weeks, mm-hmm. or you could continue the first
and notice that for both weeks.
I think the cleanest thing is to put all of the potential ordinances noticed for both weeks.
Very good.
Unless you really wanted to make a decision on a particular ordinance on the 5th and then just hold over that particular draft.
That's a good idea.
Okay. And we'll just notice them both.
Notice them all.
Notice it for both.
Yeah. Okay.
So
there's a 7 and 1 option.
That's what I'd like to see, a 7 and 1.
Okay, there's a 2 and 4 option.
2 and 4.
And so far we're talking about timing of sales and timing of ignition.
Yeah.
So the first one is sales. I'd like to see a 1 and 4.
You want to see a 1 and 4? Okay.
Well, why don't we just have an op? I mean, just
I'll have alternate paragraphs. I'll have alternate paragraphs and you can just
strike.
And I think we had a number of different ordinances in front of us at the work, sample ordinances at the work session.
Yes, we did.
So for purposes of discussion, I think we should have a safe and sane ordinance to look at.
Okay, so a provision talking about, and safe and sane
being
the prohibition against aerial fireworks, basically. Gotcha. John knows the language.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Do you need to read that?
No, I'm
And then
I've read it.
So have that provision.
Yeah.
What else? Anything else? You brought up the issue of liability of adults for people under the age of 18. State law really covers liability in actions of property damage and personal injury. I don't know if it's appropriate for, in fact, I'm quite certain it's not appropriate for us to try to modify or change state law through county code when it comes to that kind of matter.
And the other thing was, if this may only take place if it's safe and sane, but having not having to actually see the thing set off for there to be enforcement,
that would only be safe and sane. For non-discharge days.
Okay. So is that something that has to be implemented too?
Yeah.
And John's working on that.
So the enforcement.
Okay, so it's it's for enforcement, and right now, as it stands, the fire marshal or enforcement agents need to see that thing being set off.
Right.
So a neighbor can't say it's been set off.
Okay.
And they come do anything about it.
Say. It got set off, and then
a report, and and then so
I don't know if we want to do that. It is something that was brought up, and it does make, if you have my contention is that if you have ordinances and laws that are not enforced, they are nothing.
Right. And right now they can't be enforced.
Right.
So we have to. So John knows this. So we have to find a way that we can actually enforce the non-discharge.
Well, that'll bring the fireworks enforcement provisions in line with the rest of our code enforcement provisions, which is simply stated that it's a complaint-driven system, but it doesn't require the code enforcement officer or the enforcement officer to actually see it. Instead, we can get declarations, and the better the proof, the better the case, but that all goes to how we proceed through the case. It doesn't go into code language.
Right.
So
we'll
take a look at that, and we'll modify
all
that.
Right. I mean, if I report my neighbor and somebody shows up and the neighbor's got a bunch of spent fireworks,
it's evidence.
Right.
And the hearings examiner will determine.
Yeah. But is there the evidence that the one that went in your yard was theirs?
Well, that was not the...
It would be even behind the fence.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. It would become
and then the only other one is, emergency. For drought. Dry years. That was the other one.
Yeah, right.
Well, and I believe that isn't really an alternate provision. That's just a provision we're going to include.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Right?
Yes.
So that's going to. So what I'm envisioning here is an ordinance that has alternate provisions in certain spots. Alternate provisions for timing, alternate provision, an alternate or a selectable provision for safe and sane, and then just a modification of the enforcement provision.
And sale days.
Well, in the cell days, the timing.
Part of
there'll be alternates.
Okay. Right.
Yes, there'll be alternates.
Okay, very good.
So that's the direction. I think that's very workable, not much of a modification from what we
have. Can I just say, too, if for some reason, I think that what we need to do is also help retailers if there's a year where 4 days comes and none of it's on a weekend, somehow be able to shift that. Is that too hard to do?
It makes enforcement a little bit different.
Okay.
So legally speaking, you're dealing with people who have their entire revenue generated within a very short time frame.
Right.
But there's a lot of ramp up to that.
Mm-hmm.
And if all of a sudden we file an emergency ordinance that says you can't sell your fireworks during this time period, it's going to cause a financial problem.
Mm-hmm.
So that won't affect weekends. If you're talking about July 4th falling on, say, a Friday, the 7-day provision would cover the prior weekend.
Right.
The 4 would not.
That's what I'm talking about.
The 2
days.
Would not. Mm-hmm. And so that's why we'll put the alternates in.
Okay.
If you want us to, we can write a provision that's a little bit more complicated. I don't think you're going to like it, but we can write it that says that the time period is, say, 1 and 4, with the possibility of expanding the 4 if July 4th falls on a Friday or a Thursday,
yeah.
Something that's outside of the timeline.
Mm-hmm.
We can put it in there, and you can get public comment and decide whether you like the having an awkward mm-hmm. provision like that in the code.
Where can we, and I know we've heard from the folks that weekend sales are the busiest, but I've also heard that the 3rd and 4th are really the busiest.
The 3rd and 4th are going to be the busiest.
So I'd like to, is there any data we can get, or what are the, I mean, what are the fireworks sales on a particular day leading up to the 4th of July?
They should, retailers ought to have it, they'd tell us.
But regardless, if we have 1 or 2 day sales, we have good enforcement on that 1 or 2 day sales, it's just going to be up to the people if they want to buy them 5 days that they,
beforehand.
They've got to hold them in there, you know,
so
hold them and
talk,
not blow them up.
We haven't talked about was, with regard to enforcement, is enforcing, yes, and then what are the penalties?
That's
so
what John is working on.
Yeah,
the
so
penalties.
If it goes to 5 days or 7 days, the likelihood that they're going to want to light them off sooner rather than later increases. And,
right.
So
that's
sure
why you need
it. Well, I believe we have penalties in place for lighting off the fireworks outside of the allowable time period.
They should
period.
Be already existing.
Yeah,
but is it,
enforce.
Is it?
It's difficult to enforce, but that's how we're going to change the enforcement provision.
Right.
Yeah.
So this, yeah, that's
so there's not
going to
be more
the
bite
issue.
To the violation. There's just going to be more ability to detect and observe.
Well,
and
what's the penalty now?
I'm not sure.
But see, the penalty, Julie, has to do with actually watching them set it off.
Let's say they get caught. Let's say we've changed. Let's say you get caught lighting the firework.
Yeah.
What's the penalty? Is it a fine? Is it a...
I have not looked exactly at that because that hadn't been an issue before us yet.
Any
code violation is a misdemeanor, by the way.
Yeah.
We have that as a default provision, mm-hmm. so there's at least that. But as far as a financial fine...
There's a table in the back usually,
yeah.
but I would have to take a look at it.
We
could look at, you know,
it's usually about 250.
It needs to be way
minimum.
More than that.
It's usually 250 as a minimum.
Yeah.
But if 250 is not enough, then if the council wants us to bring
$2.50 isn't enough, but $250 is enough.
I don't think it's enough.
I think
so. So if we want the fine to be greater than that, then that's something that I'm going to have to do some legal research on regarding what the fine will be and present, I guess, alternates on a code amendment regarding the amount of fine.
You could see another urban.
Has to be.
I can take a look at Vancouver,
Pierce.
If that's something that we want
to
look at.
You could look at like Pierce County or
I think Vancouver is 500, I think, is their fine.
If it was 500, would we be good with that?
Be a good place to start.
I mean, would we be good not going higher than that is what I'm asking.
And you can write a ticket, but it can be high. But the whole issue about enforcement, the jurisdictions find that the cost of
enforcement
becomes so over and it detracts from law enforcement and usually a fire professional.
Got 500, we let them buy early, we'll make money.
And there's going to be this ongoing conversation about enforcement. I mean, we talked about this. We have speed limits. We're never going to catch every speeder, but
this is a different story.
You enforce or you don't enforce. If you enforce, you have to have some teeth.
This isn't a hearing. Let's go.
I'll take a look at the fine.
So, and if we're going to do
research in other jurisdictions.
If we're going to do aggressive enforcement, we need to understand it's going to cost some money and deter some people, law enforcement and first responders. The other issue is this. I believe some of the statistics we saw in the work session indicated that safe and sane are not safer from fire hazard than other fireworks.
Well, that's compared to Oregon, I didn't look at other jurisdictional data.
This is
it was well. So all I'm saying is,
It'll come out.
If we go to safe and sane, mm-hmm. if this council makes that decision, mm-hmm. we need to be clear that safe and sane doesn't mean nothing is going to catch on fire.
But you're right. Right. But also, if you remember what John said, was that those numbers weren't apples and apples, because Washington wasn't reporting fires the same way that Oregon was. So.
And we're going to bring that safe and sane provision as a proposed amendment to the code, and after public hearing, you'll have the ability to either fix it or not.
Last thing that was brought up at the work session to get clarification on whether or not you want it as part of an ordinance is the tent fee. So one thing that John had brought
they
up
said
was,
yes.
And I don't know if it requires a code change to impose the $100 tent fee
or
not.
Yeah, it does.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, I would say for the discussion.
Yeah.
Okay.
That would be your thing.
If John was bringing, he brought that up.
Yeah,
so
yeah. That helps fund enforcement.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. That it? Very good.
All right. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bill.
New business, small exhibit hall.
Bob Stevens.
Oh.
Well, hello. I haven't been here in a while.
Oh, welcome back.
I don't know if you have seen it in the news, but the one and only ice skating rink on this side of the river is closing.
We came to a hearing.
Pardon?
Here we are at our hearing.
Yeah. Well, the principals have approached me to investigate the possibility of building a building out at the fairgrounds that would house an ice rink while being compatible for our uses. I didn't really want to bring it to you guys until I knew for a fact it could be done legally and legitimately. So we've done some research. The fair master plan includes a junior exhibit hall of 45,000 square feet, which in my opinion, given our financial condition, is never going to get built. We can't even put in a new gate right now. So, plus the casino just opened a 30,000 square foot exhibit hall, which would compete with that junior exhibit hall directly, were we to ever build it. You know, I've talked to FSFG, talked to John, and on principle, we feel that building that exhibit hall with an ice rink in it would make it very viable for usage. At the same time, you know, during the fair, whenever we don't want it to be an ice rink, it's easy enough to convert. Gene Singer, my capital improvement person, asset manager, has done all the research. We met again with the principals and explained all the hoops and hurdles they'd have to jump over. I have told them that this would be very much an amphitheater type deal. You build it, you give it to us, we'll rent it back to you on a long-term lease. The same deal we have with the amphitheater, and they're all fine with that. I think they're pretty serious. Bruce Wood, one of the principals, is actually a commercial builder, so he knows what he's getting into and what he... you know, what the pitfalls are, what the hurdles would be. So I'm basically just coming to you today. I've expended a certain amount of time on this, but if it's going to go further, I want your blessing to continue to investigate, not commit, mm-hmm. but just to continue to investigate where this might go, because for all I know, you guys don't even want to consider an ice rink, you know, like hockey players or something.
Would it be in the same spot where it is in the master plan now?
No, we can't.
But it could change.
We've investigated it. We know what's involved in changing the master plan. We know we'll have to do a 1 mile radius traffic study. We know all these pieces, and we've explained it to these two guys, basically what the costs would be to those kind of things. The reason we can't put it where it is in the master plan is because that means we have to move the food court too, because the master plan calls for the new junior arena or exhibit hall to go basically where the current food court is, mm-hmm. and then there was going to be a grassy space and a new food court built. So this we'd have to go in and modify the master plan. We can do that without giving up the grandfathering that we have. This would be an opportunity, at least, to to make an advancement on the master plan that'll push out its.
Very good.
Yeah, so I think there's a chance that this could be a real win-win. I investigated enough to know there's only three operating ice rinks left in the metro area, two in Oregon, and this one. And one of the ones in Oregon is owned by the Blackhawks, so I don't know how open to the public it is. But they did convince the church that owns the building with the current arena to give them another year. So it's they're not closing this August, but August of 19.
Well, that'd be work out fine. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
I think it'd be great.
So and have we looked at financial, longer-term financial viability? So if we rent it back to them, we want somebody in there that has an ongoing operation that can pay that rent.
Correct.
So
and they've proven that. They've been in operation for 17 years, and it's for profit now.
Yeah.
They have deliberately not tried to make excess profits. They just try to make enough money to keep it open and running because neither one of them, it's not their primary job. Mm-hmm. Like I said, the one's a commercial builder. I'm not sure the other. So they're investigating other possibilities of becoming a nonprofit. But yeah, I mean, the bottom line is there's no liability to county. They have to hand us a building bought and paid for.
And so is this the... But they wouldn't want to rent it full-time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they
want to rent it full-time.
Sure.
Yeah.
Is it the kind of ice rink that they can put another floor over
top
it?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
So
you can do that with all of them.
They can rent it out for other things as well.
Right. We can.
Because it would be, they build it, then it becomes our property,
ours.
And then they rent back from us. And my question was going to, excuse me, I'll
yeah,
wait till
no,
you're
that's,
done.
It makes it more versatile if there's a way to, I don't know if it's false floor or whatever, that can roll out, and then you can use it for other
things. Same as Memorial Coliseum.
And I presume that they're going to be using it pretty much year-round, isn't that?
Yeah, and from 5 o'clock in the morning till midnight.
Yeah, okay.
So I
mean, there's all these
little
pieces. Yeah, they were pretty compelling with their testimony when they came forward and asked about another space and told about the other opportunities, which are few in the area, and they would have to go across the river. So I'm all for having it on this side of the river.
Well, currently the arenas across the river have no capacity to accept any of our skaters.
Oh, anyway, okay.
So it's a moot point. And they're aware that, same provisions as the amphitheater will apply. They have to close down if there's a concert and all that.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I just, like I said, I didn't want to spend any more time and energy if the board was against it. So I'll continue the talks and keep you posted.
Okay,
so,
thank you.
What about the master plan? You say we can't change the master plan. Can we modify it?
We can change the master plan.
I missed that
one. We just have a series of hoops we have to jump through to do it.
Yeah, okay. It's
very
doable,
good.
Though.
Yes.
Okay, good.
All right.
Thank you.
Work session for Heritage.
So Jackie Camp called me, and so there's the Heritage Farm Master Plan. That's a separate process. This is just looking at the historic preservation. I believe she said there are 7 buildings out there that are historic buildings. There are a number of other buildings, but there are 7 that are under the Historic Preservation Program. And they are in the process of hiring a consultant. One of the things that's within the consultant's scope of work is to do a work session with the council. And so she was wanting to sort of feel out, do we want to have a work session ahead of time? Does the council want to have that? Do they want to just get an update sort of after the consultant has done their work? At what point does the council want to?
They've already done their work.
Not for the historic preservation piece.
We heard it.
I think I couldn't stay the whole meeting, but I
went. Yeah, we heard it all.
But the rest of the council hasn't heard it, and I would have liked to have seen the whole thing, actually.
Okay.
So
do you
want
to...
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Okay.
It's pretty cool. Yeah, the history is.
But Mark said we've heard it.
Well, he was there. He heard it.
Yeah, right.
Okay, good. Any councilor reports?
Is there another work session?
2 of them.
There's 2 more work sessions on here, isn't there?
Councilor reports in
Stanford. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh.
I apologize.
Okay. I don't know whether this comes during that or whether I guess what else we're talking about here. Okay. So I have two things, if I could. One thing is I would like to ask if the council would agree to allow Dr. Philip Drum, a pharmacist, who is involved in the in marijuana and cannabis. Specifically, he's been active in marijuana driving research and education. And it's actually following the tragic death of his sister. But he would like to part. I've had national group contact me about this and ask if they could have somebody at our work session, give them 10 minutes or something. And I understand there's time at the table, and if other counselors would agree that it's okay to have him bring forth some information at our work session.
Who do we have scheduled?
Without
present.
The full list in front of you. So we have the director of licensing from the Liquor Cannabis Board, Becky, and then we have John Horsch, and he said he might bring somebody else from the Drug Task Force from the Sheriff's Office, Dr. Melnick. We have three industry stakeholders, Christy Stanley, Jim Mullen, and John Britt coming.
They're advocates.
So they're, if we have industry stakeholders. So he has credentials, so I thought that would be better. And this, I've given one to Jeannie, but I haven't given one to you or to Mark. This is also a national group.
I got it.
Okay. So those are some statistics to look at as well. And then the other thing is the rail, this development rules rail subcommittee that's meeting, I would like to suggest that they have a facilitator. And if it's possible for community development to get a facilitator in there. Maybe that's enough said.
Yeah.
Community planning?
Yes, yeah. Community planning. I just think that it would be helpful.
An outside facilitator or somebody from planning?
They already have somebody from planning, Jose, who's doing the facilitation. He is the facilitator
they're
now.
They're saying yes.
So this would be something similar to what the jail Blue Ribbon Commission
has.
What's
the gal that facilitated the...
Jean,
who did the schools of...
JLA. We're not using her much now.
We haven't used her much. Yep.
Well, we're not doing as much with the schools task force.
Right,
so
that's what I mean.
We're kind of saving money there.
Yeah. So would she be a fit for... I don't know. I'm just...
I don't know. On one hand, I'd like somebody a little bit familiar with doing development rules on one hand. Mm-hmm. However, I don't want super biases, so I want to be careful about the facilitation. Mm-hmm. It's just I'm concerned about the lack of kind of moving. Mm-hmm. I was in attendance at one of the things. And I suggested at the end that they elect a chair for that subcommittee, and they did do that at the end. Mark and I were at this other conference, so I couldn't be at the other one, but...
you can ask them to pick one.
Who? Well,
it has to be an open process.
Didn't they elect a chair?
They did elect a chair.
Yeah. Okay.
They don't have an outside facility.
And the chair is the...
Is John Stewart, and he's a
John
he's
Spencer.
Spencer
from Campus Washougal.
From Port.
Mm-hmm.
He sits on the freight rail in his capacity as a member of the Parks Advisory Board.
Okay,
but he also is a Port of Campus Washougal commissioner.
So JLA Associates.
Who's that?
Does a lot of facilitating for Metro. And for land use in Oregon.
And I don't want to.
Well, I think if you're looking for balance, that wouldn't necessarily be the person that I would want to try to sort out compromise.
I don't even think it's a compromise issue.
Yeah.
I think it's a let's get going
and
understand that this committee can actually, they have freedom to be doing some things, and they are not stuck by what is the examples that are given to them. They're not; they do not have to color within the lines.
Well, putting Jose as a facilitator is putting Jose in a bad situation because he's staff. He has.
Yes, that's true.
And it just is a no-win for Jose.
Right, and that's why I think even having some other staff person be facilitator.
Can we
from
ask,
that from there?
Can we ask community development to pick one?
Or community development,
community planning.
I mean, community planning to find.
So you want somebody else within that department who has knowledge, who's not intimately involved with this process to help facilitate.
But just
as a staff member or an outside consultant.
Have them pick.
We'll look at options and let's see what we can do.
I just wanted to bring it up because it seems like it's kind of.
Well, they could probably give us a couple names, and then we can.
We'll
scope out and see what work they've done in the past.
Thank you.
Excellent. Anything else? I have one. I'm not going to ask for any direction, but I would like us to think about, because it's a budget time, to think about using one of our staff positions for economic development director to start the process of looking at it. That could be
one
on a board
of the
time.
Staff persons.
Yeah.
It's a position of the county manager's office that supports the council.
Okay.
Correct.
Okay.
We have one staff.
Correct.
Good job.
And we have one position open.
We have two.
Yes, the county manager has a couple of positions that are open. Correct.
Anything else? Council reports, task forces. We just kind of covered that.
Oh, staff reports. There's a couple work session requests.
Yes, there.
Oh, staff reports. I'm sorry.
So the first work session here is from community planning to provide an update from Clark Communities Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory Committee, and this is just to provide an overview of the bicycle and pedestrian plan and discuss the 2018 work program. That implements the Clark County Bicycle and Pedestrian Master Plan. It's informational only. They just want to present this and give you an opportunity to ask questions.
I'm not saying a word. I'm not saying a word. That's on. Okay, very good.
Is this an okay? Do we have a yes?
Yeah.
No, okay. I need.
Is that okay?
I have two yeses. I need at least one more yes to move forward.
John gave me his proxy.
Okay.
Do you want to move forward with the work session?
On which item?
Bicycles.
On the bicycle and pedestrian advisory committee update?
I suppose that we have to, but I'm concerned always about the trend to take away vehicle lanes and turn them into something else.
And we all had to ride bikes to work that day.
It's downhill from my house.
Yeah.
First, I got to go up the hill first, and then it's downhill.
You when you're more tired, you're going uphill.
Yeah.
So it's a yes?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And Council for the Homeland, I don't know what that is.
So this looks like was an email that was sent. It's a work session for Kate Bedd and the county counselors in June and July regarding feedback on the homeless action plan.
So similar to the community needs assessment, this would be providing an overview of the homeless action plan and an opportunity for the council to provide feedback on the plan.
So Kate Bedd is coming up with a different formation of the Council for the Homeless about redoing the Have you been on the Council for the Homeless? So it used to be the Council for the Homeless was more of a policy board, and then it became to a board that got into the weeds for everything, which nobody wants to go to. So now they're trying to make a board that does all the implementation stuff, and then make another board just for executive policy decisions. And so it's kind of a different change of how the council is going.
So it would be like an executive board and an operations board, more or less?
And it's really relevant because when we start talking about us in Vancouver with the day center, it's going to help us to figure out where, if we put money to that day center, we have to figure out what direction we're going. So I think that's a conversation also. If we're going to have a work session, we should talk about that. Because that's going to be really relevant very quickly.
So is this a yes?
Yes.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay.
So the first one, did we want to cover that in the second session?
That was done first.
You did it first before you got here.
Yeah.
Sheriff's
right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, now, task forces, commissions, boards, et cetera.
Well, I serve on the policy advisory committee for this tolling over there. And one of the things that was taken off of the list, which was, I thought, the most injurious, it was probably in the paper, but the most injurious was the tolling that took place north and south from just south of the bridge to Going Street with no additional lanes. They did take that off. They are, however, considering as one of the plans, Plan B, which starts it's south of, it's probably around Interstate to beyond,
it's
to going north. Through it's Rose Quarter area, or maybe to 405.
Headland, Columbia was kind of misleading.
Oh, yes, it was very misleading.
I thought it was
misleading.
Like you're scrapping everything.
No.
Or something.
Very misleading. I actually don't agree with this person, just Katie's coverage of this advisory committee. She doesn't cover it very well. So, at any rate, I think that the worst plan has been dropped.
For now.
Probably the best plan was also dropped.
Yeah, the Abernathy Bridge plan?
No, no, actually, that's still on the line. Me too. That's my favorite too. And by the way, that plan and the piece that goes just even, I guess it would be west of that, because it kind of turns mm-hmm. and goes west mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. heads to I-5 again. Mm-hmm. They don't really need any additional permission from the federal government to do this because they're actually making an improvement. And so they wouldn't even have to go to the Federal Highway Department to say, can we or can we not?
Is it a westerly bypass?
It's not a bypass at all. It's adding lanes on 205,
from
just sort of
to
southwest of the Abernathy Bridge. So we continue to do our work, and as people south of or north of the Columbia River Bridge, really, we're
as noisy as you can.
I am.
People, right? I know. Trust that. Yeah. I trust that you are.
Thanks.
And just for your information, C-Tran's going to send a letter.
Good.
And
that
we're
they
essentially
want to be
sending. Anything we want, we know, is against the Constitution, so don't do anything. So, we're against it.
Yeah, well, good. And I think that we should resubmit the letter that we sent to
yes.
OTC to this PAC, because they are accepting letters, not just OTC, but to this policy advisory committee that I'm on, because they're
that's
accepting them. And Vancouver gave their letter to them, too.
Lindsay, are you on that? The letter?
On the letter?
Yeah, to the
it's the same, I would say the same letter that we sent to OTC saying mm-hmm. that we're against this and all five of us signed it.
Mm-hmm.
Send it to this
policy advisory committee.
Mm-hmm.
And we also wrote a letter about performance standards. The need for performance standards on interstates. That was FHWA letter that we wrote. I'll see if I can get a copy of that.
So one of the most powerful...
Because performance, objective performance standards are a way to measure if indeed whatever they plan to do will provide the outcome that
right.
they're suggesting.
The actual congestion relief.
is what I was implying.
So one of the most powerful things that we can do is that each member of the Value Pricing Advisory Committee is allowed to attach an addendum letter to the final report. Mm-hmm. So you will get the opportunity. Okay. So that's one of the things that will become as part of the entire packet.
Yes.
It will then go to the OTC, but then when the public is looking at what the recommendation is from the task force, that's all part of the packet, and they're going to be looking at everyone's voice in there.
Yes.
And so that's, I think,
and that's when that is when letter. Because that's what they talked about this last time. They mentioned that, you know, we can have a voice in this, and that's when I want this to go to that.
Okay.
Policy advisor, you know, attached with my
perfect
comments.
Okay. Anything else? Policy?
Nothing for me.
I have a question, though. It kind of goes back. Two things we brought up I haven't heard about. One is the reviews going back and forth of the plans. We said you get one bite at the apple. That's it.
That's actually
also engineer stamp.
That's in legal court. Taylor was working on those.
Still working?
And
can
you check?
I can. He's been busy with a few other things. But
like trial?
I'm sure, like
yeah,
something.
Well, we need to have that stuff.
I can say on other areas, Mitch is already streamlining some processes in in that department and in that particular process, and I think we're already getting some positive feedback from that and bringing resolution to things that haven't had resolution.
So to that point, it's pretty clear what we want. So short of actually an ordinance right now, he can implement this direction that we want, right?
He is, yes. He's already been making very strategic changes, and I think you'll have more information coming in the next week or two. I think a formal...
Okay. Okay, we're adjourned.